Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. The trustees for the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board recently released a strategic plan for their term in office. At a glance, the document is very short, with sweeping expressions of what they hope to achieve. On today's show, the chair of the board, Jane Klassen-Janinga, is going to take us behind the plan to explain what is going on. She will give context and flesh out the details. Most importantly, she will give insight into how the board's goals will be measured and achieved over the next 4 years. Plus, she will explain how the school board will deal with the rising pressures seen across the country by parents and provincial governments when it comes to gender identity and how the local board hopes to respond to these concerns in the schools. I'm so pleased to have with me today Jane Klassen-Janinga, the chairperson of the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks for having me.
What is the purpose of a strategic plan for the school board?
So the strategic plan is, the purpose of the strategic plan is to give the board a roadmap, per se, as to what the priorities and to some extent the obligations of the board and the administration team and everyone who works for the board, an opportunity to know what is important to us for the next 4 years. So a strategic plan happens every 4 years, and it's actually part of a mandated role of trustees as per the Education Act.
How is it different from, say, other strategic plans? I've talked to municipal leaders, I've talked to business leaders, to nonprofits, all of them have a strategic plan. Is there anything different or unique that you think makes a difference to a school board?
I would say that you're right. Every organization has a strategic plan. And in education, per se, this is ours. And I think what is different I don't know that it's different. I think it's just our way of giving some cohesion to what it is that we do on a daily basis. And what's going to affect our communities the most in the most positive way that we can project.
Let's talk about the plan itself then. In this new strategic plan, one of the priorities is to excel in learning. What are you going to do that is different going forward when it comes to this particular area?
Well, the interesting thing about strategic plans and excelling and learning is it's a continuum. It's constantly changing over the course of the next 4 years, and even over the course of the next several months, we're constantly being given new strands of education that we have to, and curriculum. The curriculum changes, I guess that's where I was going with that. We're constantly having to adapt to new curriculum, and sometimes on a very short time frame. It's not unusual to have a curriculum shift, for example, the end of June to implement already in September. We, in this case, we know that there are new shifts in curriculum that will be in place for September of 2024. And so these roadmaps, the Excel in Learning, in addition to, we want to improve upon what we're doing. What are we doing good? What needs to be improved upon? Celebrate our successes. That's important as well in the Excel in Learning. And ensure that our staff and the students are feeling supported in this process of learning.
Let's just untangle that a little bit, because Part of this, obviously, is the provincial government, Ministry of Education, saying, here's new curriculum, which you just described. What are some of the things that you know are coming down the pipe that parents and the community should know about that are going to impact the board and impact the curriculum, say, coming following September?
So, for example, we know that there are changes coming to how we assess reading in our kindergarten to three, JK to actually kindergarten to grade two assessments that are coming out. We know that de-streaming, which has taken place for grade nines, is continuing to move along into grade 10. And we also know that the ministry is adding a tech or a technology credit per se to all students who are in grade nine. And this is definitely, I think this is a definitely positive step in the right direction because it really broadens the horizons of our secondary students as they're trying to begin a path towards what it's going to look like after they graduate from high school. So those are some of the immediates.
As you've talked about this, it sounds to me like these are things that are coming from the provincial government. In the area of excelling and learning, what are you doing locally going forward to enhance or to change things in that particular strategic objective?
Within the Excel and Learning, we have options as to how we address each of our different learning, and it isn't just it's all through the grades. It may be how we choose if we know that there's a certain directive, how we choose to address that directive is up to us. Do we choose to do it with utilizing a certain program, for example? Is it the opportunity to bring in consultants to help our teachers across the classroom? Is it taking a look at experiential learning, which means doing things that are outside of a classroom, taking a look at what you can do in real life circumstances and convert them into learning within a classroom setting? There are a variety of ways.
It sounds all wonderful, but it also sounds very vague. And of course, a strategic plan sets out goals and says, here's the things that we want to achieve. Here are the things that we're benchmarking. That doesn't seem to be part of what you've talked about, nor does it seem to be part of what the plan talks about. There's nothing very specific about it. Why is that? Why aren't there specific things that you can say, we're going to be doing this, we plan to do this? This is how we're going to measure it. This is how we're going to benchmark it.
Okay, so I think there are certain themes that in learning that excel in learning that are always there. So things like academics always have to be in our excel in learning. Our instruction and assessments always have to be a part of that. Extracurriculars, the different types of learning pathways, materials, courses, resources, special education, intensive supports, those are part of the excel in learning. I guess what's different is how we approach those. And it sometimes is as simple as a classroom by classroom or school by school basis or community by community. Different communities have at their fingertips different resources. If you're in Apsley, for example, you're in a rural setting. So how does your rural setting apply to what you can excel in learning in your school versus a completely urban school in Peterborough, for example, where you are surrounded by buildings and streets and a lot of that whole entire different realm than you would find in a rural school. So using the academics and the ex instruction and applying it to what's happening in schools in each community is part of that key Excel and learning piece.
All right, but it seems pretty obvious these things that we're talking about. And one of the goals that parents identified through the engagement process that you used to create the strategic plan and the provincial government and its stated goals, how do you measure the success of whether you've achieved a particular objective within the strategic plan?
So I would say that those are, because those are provincial directives, They become keys for us to do as well. How do we measure? Well, we're going to measure by assessments. We're going to measure by how well are our students how are students adapting to these new curriculums. For example, part of the reading, the Right to Read report was very clear on what we needed to do as far as trying to get our students into reading, but not necessarily the old school where, in the old school you read a book and you were at level one, now you're in level two, now you're in level three. Those leveled readings they're a tool, but they're not to be the assessment anymore. We're taking a look at a more holistic approach. Holistic approach is to take a look at the big picture, and utilize more of the everyday things that you see around you. It may be as a field trip to a grocery store and read the labels on a can or in a produce section and have those conversations. It may be sit down with a book that identifies certain sounds in this new reading model, we're going back. The government's talked about back to basics, and in essence, we're doing that. We're going back to phonics. We're going back to taking a look at all those things that are have always been a part of reading, but we've gone off on, I suppose, on tangents on how we read, and really going back to trying to find a happy medium that allows students to be successful and take a look at the assessments from various standpoints.
You've already addressed this a little bit, and that's one of the second things under the Excel of Learning. It talks about the diverse learning pathways responsive to the unique strengths and skills of and all needs of students. And you said that, it's different in Apsley than in, say, Peterborough or in Clarington or in Northumberland. And that makes a lot of sense. But for example, what are the current student teacher ratios on average in your elementary schools? Are there sufficient teachers currently? And are your ratios reasonable enough that the children aren't getting the attention that they need in the classroom?
I would say we always need more teachers in our classrooms. We could always use smaller ratios. We know students learn better with in smaller class sizes. But as part and parcel of what we have to work with, a lot of those are numbers, and they're provincially directed. So class sizes are not something that we can choose within KPR. Class sizes are a ratio that are set out for us by the government. So it's how we choose to use our resources. But within that context, we have, as a board, we've also committed to having coaches and extra people in our classrooms, whether it's special education resource teachers, whether it's somebody who comes in once or twice a week to take a look at a classroom and say, okay, we need some extra help here. So we've got extra eyes in the classroom. We also our superintendents of education are hands-on. They're in our schools daily to make sure that the teachers are feeling and the educators and the administrators are feeling supported in the classroom. But it's a balancing act for sure.
The plan calls for a safe, inclusive environment for students. Yet we are seeing a growing movement by parents and provincial governments related to the role of schools when it comes to assisting students regarding gender identity. How does the school board plan to honor this strategic goal in light of these rising pressures?
Well, I think the big piece is about safe and inclusive spaces. We want to make sure that everybody feels that they have a home in our schools. In essence, the school is it's a hub for community. It's also where children spend 7 to 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours a day in the spaces. They need to be able to walk in the door and feel that the adults and the students are accepting of them in regardless of their gender identity, regardless of their socioeconomic backgrounds, They need to be, regardless of their cultures, all of those intertwine in various ways, and we need to take a look and make sure that we are creating spaces that are that where they feel safe and recognized.
But with the rising pressure and we see these governments making policy and pushing it down. We've seen parents responding locally to what's being done and feel that they needed to be included. What is the school board's position when it comes to gender identity?
We always go back to the Human Rights Commission. What does the Human Rights Code say about what we need to do as far as recognizing each and every person for who they are? That's always our guiding principle in how we treat students and staff in our board.
But parents will also argue that they have rights and that they should be included in the process. How does your board going forward intend to make sure that that's the case?
We will always sit down with parents and have those conversations that may, and sometimes the conversations can be difficult. We recognize that not everyone is comfortable with terminologies and with the way the government is and including federal and provincial governments on what is and is not appropriate in a classroom setting. So again, we sit down with those parents. We'll sit on a one-to-one basis. We've had opportunities where we've had webinars, or where we've had where we've had in we've had a parent involvement in different schools. It comes at various angles, but really it boils down to what is right for everybody, and what is right for everybody is an individual, and sometimes we have to agree to disagree. But again, our goals are always based on what does the Human Rights Commission say, and how can we and then how can we support all of those, even those people who have issues or are not as comfortable with terminology as others are.
Your final priority is to enrich communities, and here you pledge to enhance accountability, transparency, and evidence-based decision making. Going forward, how do you intend to improve on what you're currently doing?
I think the transparency piece is very important. We really want everybody to feel that they know what's going on in our school system. We don't want to do things in a cloak and dagger situation, whether it's through our internal system. So we use EDSB across our school system. We post a lot of our information there. Parents have the ability to take a look at it. Staff have the ability to take a look at it. Students have the ability to take a look at it. And also we are constantly adapting our website and our home pages so that decisions we're making, not only the decisions, but the processes that we're embarking upon are there for everyone to see.
On the theme of accountability, you produced an engagement report for the strategic plan. Now, how are the results of that report reflected in the strategic plan?
We look at, I think they are in our how-tos. The themes we took from we had all those different, we had, well, 2,500 participants and 2,200 combined thoughts and 86,000 rankings. All of those are important, and they are they're embedded in the strategic plan. They're not necessarily, they're embedded in the themes, but they're also embedded in our, now we've got our themes, what do we do with them? And so they become part of the board action plan, which is the strategic plan leads us, tells us, and we changed our title a little bit to our strategic plan for inspiring excellence in learning, success in life and community. And then we took that and we developed the excel in learning, succeed in life, and enrich our communities as our three pillars. And each of those pillars and each of those pieces we've talked about this morning are there are action plans for each of those across the different departments, and then they integrate, they cross-pollinate, if you will, across the different departments so that there is a unification of all those themes right across the board.
So how then do you measure the success? Because that you've ex described all of the factors, and there seems to be so many moving parts in this. How do you measure so that you hit benchmarks so that you go, okay, we've achieved this or we've achieved that?
So it starts at the school level. So every school has a school improvement plan. And with the school improvement plan, there are class improvement plans. So how does each class how are they measuring their successes? What are they seeing changes? And as the school has developed what their improvement plan looks like, if they're looking at we want to improve our reading skills and our math skills. And it's not just EQAO based. EQAO is a piece. It's not the be all end all of our assessments. So within a school, what are teachers seeing? What are the challenges we still have? And then as you have each school plan, then you have those principals and vice principals taking those challenges and those successes to their greater regional plan. And as they meet and talk about what's happening in each of their schools, then they can determine from a holistic standpoint. And as you know, we have families of schools, and then we can have families of schools conversations that say, okay, this is what this family of school is experiencing. We need to take a look at the successes we've seen. And this group is successful in this area. What have they done differently that we can adapt over here? So it is a constantly evolving plan, and we take a look at those. And it will never be the same for every school. It will never be the same for every class. It's a matter of taking a look, and then if we've got have healthy, happy schools, then we know we're succeeding in as much as the mental health and well-being of our students is as important as the reading, writing, and arithmetic that they used to call back in the days, because they're all what makes our assessments a part and parcel. When we do our student censuses and we hear if students are happy and they know that they have a caring adult in the school, that's just as much as success as somebody got an A in math and used to get a B.
What are the consequences, if any, if these goals don't get met?
Well, the consequences, unfortunately, are the students are not successful, and that's never our goal. Our goal is that we make sure that our students can be the best that they can be given their strengths. And we also, in a classroom, as you know, we're playing to so many different levels and so many different strengths. And the challenge is, how do you reach them all? And so we have what we call, and we use it a lot in our special education languages, but it really goes across. We call it tier one, tier two, and tier three. Tier one is good for all. Tier two is good for some, and tier three is good for a few. So the tier three would be those that need added help, added resources, etc. But what those tier three students are expressing and those type of resources mean that that are in tier two, if we know that those are helping, then why can we not also bring those down to our tier two students? Same thing with the tier two. They're not quite all the way. They don't need that one-on-one, but they've got some challenges. But if it's good for them, then it's good for the whole population. And so by using those levels, tier one, two, and three, we're able to address all of our students.
I appreciate that you've put that in the context of students, but I'm thinking more in terms of the school board and the trustees. What are the consequences to you? What happens or to the principals and the administration? On that side, what are the consequences if a strategic goal is not met?
Well, in a big picture, the consequence for trustees are you're not reelected at the next term. That's the biggest consequence. Because parents are unhappy by what they see. They don't see the vision that you said you're going to set out and you're going to do. And if it's not evident to parents, then we're doing it wrong. If it's not, if we can't see, if our communities don't see the efforts we're putting into, then we're not doing something right. What's the challenge for administration and principals? Then we need extra help within. So within a school, if a school is struggling, then we're going to send in extra resources. And you know, we always have the ability I guess to focus on a particular area if they're having more of a challenge than somebody else. So we can kind of hone in on what is a challenge and go in with as much with not, I won't say with guns a blazing, but go in with some extra support to give them that understanding. And it's about a shared knowledge. And if we share our knowledge across jurisdictions, whether it's our finance department, our HR department, the print shop, our warehousing department, these priorities that we set forth are not just for schools and students. It's really for the whole board.
So how does the board keep the strategic plan a living guiding document over its term in office?
It's something we talk about every month. We talk about our strategic plan every month at our board meetings. We have regular updates as to this is what we've done. This is the stream where we focused on, and here's where we've seen strides, and here are some of the challenges. And sometimes it may be as much as the director or a department saying, you know, this is the goal that you set, being the you know, we as Board of Trustees set, approved the strategic plan. This is the plan that you set, and we're having a struggle trying to get there. So sometimes it's as bad as having to ask for more resources. And if we and we're able to sometimes implement more resources to be able to assist in that area.
Jane Klassen-Janinga, thank you so much for talking to me today.
It was a great opportunity to share with you this morning, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.